welcome to No Page Unturned, the podcast where Christina, Steph, and myself, Josh, go in-depth discussing books, mainly focusing on those written by BIPOC and LGBTQ plus authors. You don't have to read along with us, but be warned, there will be spoilers ahead.
Janelle used the power of love, and it was super effective.
Yeah, it was the power of love and the power of self-respect.
She was. Yeah. And the power of friendship, too.
It was the power of friendship.
I do like the title of, like, when you turn the page from the last chapter and it goes, Part 2, Endings in the House of Always.
That's a very dope, like, name.
Yeah.
That is...
It also sets it up that you know, like, this is the climax.
I do appreciate that Jen Lyons does not try to make her parts to her books equal. She's like, no, this is part one, and that now new stuff is happening, so it's part two, even though it's only like 10 chapters and it's an eighth of the size of the rest of the book.
Sometimes themes don't take as long to work out. This is a bottle episode, and this is the neck.
Yes, yes, where everybody escapes.
Right. Turns out there was no cork.
Like, even in book one, there was, like, a one-page chapter.
Oh, yeah.
Where Kieran, I think it was when Kieran was, like, it was after Talon told the story about impersonating Darzin's wife and then sleeping with Kieran, and then Kieran was like, nuh-uh, I'm not
That's
doing this
right. anymore. That's right, I totally forgot.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, I
appreciate experimenting
that.
With, like, stuff.
Yes.
Page length. Yes.
T'was effective.
I am skipping ahead a little bit here, but I appreciate a book where, like, one of the climaxes was so climactic and feel good that I kind of forgot that there was another problem that still needed to be solved. Like, once, like, Kieran, you know, Volkieran realized, you know, the truth, and Caroline comes back to life, and everybody's free of the mindscape. I forgot that there was still, like, a kraken and a dragon to deal with. and then they come back to that, and they're like, oh, right. And I was like, oh, yeah, there's still, like, a whole thing that we have to deal with.
Yeah.
To be fair, they're basically in a time stop, so.
Yeah. And I think they end up, like, spending a couple weeks in there before they go back.
I think so too.
They at least take a breath, because they deserve it.
I don't think that's technically revealed until the next book, though.
That's true. We just know that some time has been taken, but we don't know how much.
Yeah. And what's even more hilarious about that is that all of their backstories that we've been getting throughout this book has been leading to the last Strahemia part. It wasn't leading to them all going to the lighthouse. The lighthouse
right.
was a side
yes,
thing.
That's true.
That happened for the length of the book.
Was just like, yoink.
The whole main plot of their backstories was leading to this thing that we're returning to.
Yeah.
There are so many analogies in fiction that I love that she crammed into it. It was like, this was an episode of 24, that show we were all obsessed with in 2007. This is like the D&D campaign where it's like, all right, you can all take a long rest. You've earned it. Get your little pocket plane. Do your little thing. Man. If we have one thing that I hate more than anything, it's boats. If there's one thing I love more than anything, it's, like, having your own little pocket plane. Because, like, the number of parties I've been to where I just need, like, 10 minutes to, like, not be talking to a person.
Yeah. Like, the bathroom's full. So.
I just need to bamf out, pet a cat, and come back.
Yeah. The one thing about, like, the spell rope trick is that I would never be able to get into the pocket plane because I'm not very good at climbing.
Oh my god, I never thought about that.
I summon this dimension that I get into. Oh, I gotta climb the rope to get into it.
It's not happening. Gym class? Oh.
You had that in gym classes too?
Oh, yeah. I never got very far.
I don't know if we had it regularly. You guys probably had it because it's like part of the president's physical fitness test.
I think it is or it was, but even I did not have upper body strength. This is in no way like a brag.
Yeah.
But I also always threw the test every time because I'm petrified of heights. Like, even if I could climb that high, I never would have. That's very bad.
There's an excellent episode of a podcast called Maintenance Phase on the president's physical fitness test. And I don't know if this will, like, cause you psychic damage to hear, but they basically never, like, tracked the results of those in any meaningful way. So the entire country was doing it for, like, years and, you know, in an effort to, like, make kids more fit, but they didn't actually check if kids were becoming more fit.
That's the most American thing I've ever heard.
So, you know, on the plus side, it doesn't matter that you threw all those rope climbing tests because none of it really got recorded, reported in any kind of meaningful way.
We got graded on it, though, at a local level.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, you could fail gym, which is absurd. Okay, there are a couple schools of thought that we don't need to go into, like, educational philosophy.
This could be, like, a hard veer that we should probably not take. Weird that three people who do a book podcast as adults would have thoughts on gym class.
I don't see the connection, Steph. I don't know what you're talking
actually,
about.
Let's move on. Anyway, so
we start off with now everybody's in the mindscape except for Thurvishar. Mm-hmm. And we find out that Javon doesn't, like, her zombie cardio doesn't just pass over to be alive again.
Kind of funny. It was like the first time she'd had to use her lungs in like 15 years.
Ouch.
Yep. Now she's gonna do cardio all over again. I'm sorry, Siobhan.
Sorry, Siobhan.
My favorite part is Talia picking a direction where being it's either this way or this way. It's like direction is 360 degrees, sweetie. And she's like, but that's not what I thought it was.
Yeah. I thought of two directions and I asked the coin
and then it turns out the coin was wrong, but you know, we got a delightful commentary.
I really like that she's there's always the character that's like the idiot savant. She's not like Talia's not stupid, but like she fulfills that archetype of just someone who's like, I bet it's this, and then it opens.
Use the power of probability to just be kind of perky and cute and all-knowing.
Yeah, I'm blanking on like a good analogy for her, but it's definitely a trope.
Yeah.
Tom Bombadil. She's the Tom Bombadil of this.
She does love nonsense.
Not enough singing. Oh, she does love her wife, though. That's true. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Say something. Oh, like, there was, like, a bit of a second where I was kind of like, this is, like, kind of a weird scene to have, like, in this climax where they're like, oh, no, we thought it was this way, and then it wasn't, and now we gotta fight some guys. But, A, I mean, we learned kind of two important points, which is that the god powers don't work in the mindscape. And also, we got the extremely entertaining bait and switch that they did where Talia was like, hello, boys! I need to find a sweet roll or something.
They called it, like, backup plan J, which makes me wonder what all the other letters plans are.
Yeah, doesn't she say? She's like, I don't have a cabbage available. Something like that. Yeah, it's so great to have, like, Talia and Javon just being themselves and working together. It's great.
I know that this is definitely not a criticism, but it definitely feels like that particular scene was written, like, at 2 a.m., like, on deadline. It's like, you need your chapters in by 6 a.m. It's like, great.
Yeah, it was a delight. And, you know, honestly, it was a delight for every time that the band has gotten back together in this book, I've been happy. And now they're back together again in the Mindscape, and it also made me happy.
Yeah.
Fantastic. There's also a very funny bit where somebody says that Talia and Javon are Cinere's best friends.
Yes, I was just going to mention that. Yes. I love that Cinere is so powerful that Valcarath would be like, yeah, that's, you know, oh my god, I forgot her name. What is Janelle's mom's name?
Taya.
I almost said Mistra, which is the goddess of magic in the Forgotten Realms.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like, oh, I have all three sisters now. And Karen's like, huh? Wait, you only got two. Oh, Cinere, that makes sense.
That makes sense, because she's their bestie. Yeah. And she's very good at magic. And there's like,
doesn't she have a note where
she was like, I can't refute this exactly, but I want to.
I hate that everybody makes this assumption, but then I realize it's true.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, like, oh, I do hate this.
But no one seems to believe me, which is even funnier.
It's even better.
That is probably one of my favorite themes of this book. And it started last book, too. But particularly in this book, it's like everybody being like, you like us. We're your friends. You care about what happens to us. She's like, shut up.
I don't like you.
When did you think something was up with this Valcarath that it leads up to? Because I think it's at this point that I thought something was up. Because then he gives Kieran the, like, ultimatum of, like, come with me and I'll let your friends go. And like, you'll be proving friendship has value. Mm. And I'm like, Kieran, he already did this. Like, he already tried to trick you this way.
He fights dirty. Yeah. I genuinely didn't pick up that there was anything weird going on. I think I was just like, yep, that sucks. And then like, and then, you know, right next, I got very sidetracked by the whole like Syndral memory void thing. And I was just like, oh, so I didn't pick up on the behavior.
Well, Kieran has a line of like, if I refuse, then I prove Valcour's point and still lost. And I'm like, I don't know, Kieran. It wasn't that I like figured it out. It's just like, I was like, something is weird here now. It's almost like they were repeating, but not repeating. And the fact that Kieran, even though Valcarath already betrayed their little deal, the fact that Kieran still had this like, oh, if I refuse, I lose the philosophical debate that I'm having with Valcarath and I'll go back to him anyway. And I'm like, I don't know if this adds up. And not in like a way of like, I don't know if this adds up, like if it makes sense for the writing. I mean, like, I don't think this adds up, like something is off here.
You know, if you picked it up, I'm sure it's there. Like, for real.
Oh, yeah, no, I agree with you that this would have been a time where a reader who is not me would have picked up something. But as we've established, Josh sees things coming, and
truly.
I really don't.
But then what really threw me off was Janelle being like, take me! And I was like,
yeah,
what?
I forgot then, this whole part. I forgot that, then, yeah, like, Janelle goes away, and then she comes back, and she stabs Kieran in the back. Like, I forgot that that's how the reveal happens. I remember what the reveal was, but I did not remember how it happened.
Going back to when I first read it, like, Valcarath and Kieran literally say what at the same time. And I also said what. I was like, what the fuck?
What in three harmonies?
And then they both vanished, and I was
and it's like, where did they? Okay, yeah. What is she like? I think she says this later. She's like, Kieran's not the only one that's allowed to make boneheaded sacrifices.
Oh yeah. And then we get that memory of Sarek when he basically visits Ralesvar.
So it sounds like Syndral, like when they broke up with Sarek, basically like altered Sarek's memory and removed all his memories of them.
No, I think Elena or Alana Milligrees did. Okay. That she, when she made, when she made the person who became Kieran so that he could reincarnate and try to fix everything, she took all the good stuff and left all the shit behind, so like he wasn't traumatized and he wasn't like the evil god of darkness. But then she's in Volkaroth's memory, so he's like, well, I know that I was happy, but I can't access it, so I hate you, I think.
There is...
Josh, there is back me up or correct me.
No, you're right.
Okay.
But I just wanted to point out there's a very funny part to all this, because in the last book, Kieran and Thervishar make the, you know, the leap that Volkaroth is a child now. And then Senare, in the beginning of this book, says, no, you were wrong. Volkaroth wasn't a child. Volkaroth is all of Sarek's hatred and blah, 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 bad feelings. And guess what? Senare was wrong. Thervishar was right. It turns out, like, it was Alanya Milligrees that took the... Like, Volkaroth is only all of Sarek's hatred and all that stuff because of what Alanya Milligrees did. And it turns out that Volkaroth was a child, and that Volkaroth has been Kieran this whole time. They're right. Senare is wrong. Hide your face. I'm gonna brag about it because Thervishar won't.
Fair, especially to Senare.
No,
well, he wasn't a kid, right? Like, Team Senare defense. Like, he was just incomplete. Like, he couldn't be mature, but he also was, like, he wasn't inchoate, right? He wasn't like, ooh, butterflies, I have object permanence now. I don't know anything about children. Disclaimer. Clearly. So he's like, he is and he isn't. Maybe? Question mark? Let us know in the comments.
Yeah. I'm afraid of them.
Well, basically what happens is when Kieran rejoined with Sarek, they were basically unfrozen in time and then got, like, all the trauma that has been the last thousands of years of Volkaroth. Mm-hmm. Just got, like, trauma dumps on Kieran combo Sarek at once. Mm-hmm. And that's what's been going on.
Right, like he hasn't had the emotional fortitude to understand what's happening to him. Is he baby?
Right, he needed Sarek to help, like, process it or, like, balance it out.
Yeah, it wasn't that Volkaroth is all, you know, all the hatred and it's more like, this is what it feels like to experience all the trauma at once. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel good.
It's a bad time.
Yeah. Yeah, because at the heart of it, he's not doing the, like, supervillain thing where he's like, friendship isn't real. Just like, that's stupid. What he is like, I wish friendship weren't real because I'm killed so much pain. Everyone. And I feel responsible for it. It's like, right. Oh, that makes much more sense.
Which I think is fun because it's like, you know, being the king of demons, being the embodiment of all of Sarek's hatred and negative feelings. You know, I'll always say I love tropes. Tropes are great. But it's a very fun twist that it turns out that Volkaroth is not those things. This, like, superlative that Volkaroth is just, like, holy shit, all of this bad experience at once. And now Kieran and like, it goes with the theme of these books, is that the eight immortals are not gods, they're people. And Sarek and Kieran are both people. Experiencing this, oh, I I drained the sun and killed millions of people. And experiencing that all at once, plus the betrayal of Relisfar, plus Kieran having to deal with Sarek's trauma, and Sarek having to deal with Kieran's trauma, and it's happening all at once. And that's why, like, when Kieran rejoined, it wasn't just like automatic success.
Yeah,
I think that's neat.
Therapy works, kids. You gotta work through your stuff.
Yeah, good therapy session, guys. It only took every person you know.
Yeah, I was gonna say like 8 close family and friends, and some of their partners, and also a dragon and a kraken.
And also some people who just kind of accidentally were there at the time.
And the ever-present fear of death.
Yeah. Just all of that.
It worked.
Yeah, so it is therapy, it's not therapy, but it's also like, man, you can't just have your therapist and then go home to an empty house. Like, friends.
Yeah.
And Jareth's back! Jareth's back! Yay. I love him. Yeah. There's a friendship not complicated by thruppling. I love that.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah. It's like, you know, everybody else is like, got their own shit, but like, Jareth.
Jareth. Just a grade-A good boy.
Yeah. Solid golden retriever of the series.
Yes, absolutely.
I guess now he's got demon trauma.
Yeah, so does Janelle.
Yeah.
So it'll bind them together as siblings. It's a very awkward scene when, like, Corin Milligrees is there, like, with his lost daughter and dead son.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He does suck. I don't like him.
I mean, yeah. Look. It's gotta be very awkward. To be seduced by the object of magic.
I can't remember. Does he recognize Janelle as his, like, daughter? Like, literally recognize her?
Okay, he knows, and also she's got the eyes.
He's also in a little bit of denial about it. Okay, I remember him saying to Theron, like, I think in the last book, he's like, I think I would remember if I slept with the goddess of magic.
Yeah, but I wasn't sure if, like, they had met to a degree where, like, she had introduced herself or anything.
I solve all my problems with military might, and I believe in Kor. I let my soldiers push my daughter for no reason. I love that scene. He pushes Janelle, and then Sanare has the note. It's like, oh, she's strong, but that doesn't mean she's still light as a feather. And, like, she moves a little bit, and then she pushes back, and he goes, like, 12 feet.
Yeah.
That's where the Wilhelm scream of the book would definitely be.
The what?
The Wilhelm scream of the book would definitely be in that moment.
What's the Christina, Wilhelm scream?
Do you not know it?
Oh my god!
It is a scream that has been
used
in movies and television shows
years. Is the audio?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm going to find a clip of it and send it to you so you can listen to it on the podcast.
You should insert it into the audio.
I will. Yes.
Nice.
It's in, like, literally every movie. I will put this
and
in
like every Discord Looney Tunes chat. Cartoon.
I'm putting this in the general chat.
I didn't know it.
I'm so excited for you to have this. It's like from like a German movie in the 30s or something.
Oh, so it's literally some guy named Wilhelm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely the Wilhelm scream.
Today I learned.
Oh no, it's from a movie called Distant Drums from 1951.
Is the drum named Wilhelm? Screaming? Sorry for editing out, or for you having to edit out all the sounds of me opening Gmail.
That's fine. I'm excited for this. This is important to me. And yes, I will edit it in case maybe somebody in our listenership doesn't know the Wilhelm scream. I guarantee that anybody listening to this, if you have consumed media in the last 50 years, you've heard the Wilhelm scream
at least once.
But if you don't know exactly what it's called, you'll learn.
I've played it like 4 times.
I know, it's so good. It's a perfect sound effect.
It's every bad guy without a name getting killed. It's red shirt.
It's in every Star Wars movie. I think George Lucas really loves it, so it's in like every George Lucas movie, Indiana Jones, like Star Wars, all that. It's in basically every movie in general. Like anytime there's something going on, it's the wolf on screen. So yes, listeners, enjoy.
You shall know them by their screaming.
So yes, Janelle pushes a guy, he flies 10 feet in the Wilhelm scream place. Yeah.
Back to the mindscape for
we didn't really finish.
I love the scene when, and this is another like flipping on tropes kind of deal, when you know, Valkaroth comes back with Janelle and is like, oh, I keep my deals and blah, blah, blah. And then Janelle is like talking to Kieran and Tirith and goes to Kieran, do you trust me? And the cliche thing to do would be like, and Kieran knew at that moment when he looked into Janelle's eyes that she had a plan and he could trust what she has in store. But instead, Kieran goes, always, and then thinking in his head, I don't know.
It's a very like,
what is she talking about? And then like, Janelle says something about ripping the Band-Aid off.
Yeah.
And then Kieran and Tirith are like, what the fuck are you talking about? And it's so funny in this like high tension moment where Janelle's trying to explain what's going on, and Kieran and Tirith are like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
We're going with this, but we don't know what's happening.
Yeah, but especially it like could have been like, we're in love and we have a connection, and I knew in that moment that Janelle had the right idea.
Yes. It's like, no, but do it.
I don't know. I'm just saying, okay. I'm just saying always because it seemed like the right thing to say. And I also love in that same moment when Kieran's like, I've always loved you, Tirith. And Tirith is like, you asshole. How did you feel about the reveal of what's been happening?
The stabbing was a lot, but at that point I was also like, I don't know what's happening, but I trust Janelle. Like, I was like, it would be a pretty wild thing for her to somehow like be converted now to the bad boys and to actually kill Kieran. Also, you can't clearly kill Kieran in the Mindscape anyways.
Yeah. Well, I guess you can go like brain or soul dead or whatever. Because they were like, Kalindra, they did the Matrix thing where like, if you die here.
Yeah.
So maybe something could, like, nothing's going to happen to Kieran.
He's Omega Kieran dead now.
Yeah. So.
Omega Kieran is a great name.
One of my favorite things in books is when a problem is solved, not by swords and sorcery, but by, like, realizing an inner truth. And I appreciate when especially because like last book was a very bombastic swords and sorcery ending, whereas this, and we get that a little bit with the Kraken and the dragon, but this is like a very much like the power of emotional support. Mm-hmm. I like that a lot, and like everybody coming together at the end and being like, because we're not leaving, like we're staying here, we're staying with Kieran. Love.
There's a line here that I didn't know the answer to. I'm wondering if you two knew, when Kieran's about to give himself up to Valkaroth, and Tirith calls him an asshole. He says he fell in love with Sarek first. What is he talking? Like who? Oh, yeah. Who was that?
I don't know. I should know.
What was Tirith's,
The only thing I know is that he was Tarandel the Black, right? No, that was his
dad. He was
Atro Kandor.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think the only thing I could think of was that Tereth remembers his time in the afterlife with Sarek.
He can't forget the afterlife. You're so smart.
When Sarek's soul was healing.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
They remember all their past lives, including when they volunteered to come back. But I always forget that it took Sarek's soul like something like 500 to 1,000 years to heal.
Yeah, it was a while. That's and true. That
they were just all chilling.
Wouldn't Tereth have a different relationship with him? Maybe he didn't know.
I don't know. It was weird.
That sounds like perfectly
plausible. Also, I don't know. Maybe he's like being metaphorical, you know?
Yeah, or maybe he realizes what's going on, where he's like, I fell in love with the nice part of you. It's true. I'm grasping.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask Jen Lyons one day.
Okay, yeah. That would be the easiest way to do it.
Truly.
God, it's got to suck for authors who aren't dead for like 100 years. They have to answer questions about things that they wrote when they were asleep.
I disagree. Yeah. I love being asked questions about things like that.
Okay, fair. Actually, I do think Jen is probably the kind of person who likes that, too.
Because it means you're interested.
More power.
Yeah. I submitted a short story. Think that there aren't a lot of people out there thinking about these books as deeply as we are, too.
Maybe not, yeah.
Picking apart chapter by chapter.
But that's why I think like it would be annoying. It's like, on this page, didn't you mean X? You're like, I don't know. why would I, of all people?
Two times in this book, and I think it's because we all got like the first edition of the hardcover, where mm-hmm. there was text in, at least in my copy, there was text that clearly should have been a footnote that was in like the main body of the text.
Oh.
There were two times that happened to me, and one was in one of these, and the only reason I caught it, there might have been more, but the main one I caught this time was, there's a bit where I think it's Tereth's point of view, and it switches from a second person, like a Tereth saw this, he said that, to an I, and it's like a little commentary.
That's what it was supposed to be. Okay, yeah, I thought that was just typos.
There is a mistake in both the official Kindle version and the hardcover with a footnote, and it might have been the same.
Yeah, there's
situation.
There was two that I found in this book.
There's a moment where they look through the binoculars or whatever and see Shaloran dead, and Tereth goes running down stairs. And Janelle, who's in a much higher position, gets there very quickly. And Tereth looks up out the cliff and then looks at Janelle and is like, we're going to have a talk about. And then he's like, I don't have time to worry about
her abilities right now.
Mm-hmm. And there's no footnote there. There's a moment later on with Javon. And it has a footnote next to it. And then the footnote is like something like, yeah, I don't know how she got there so fast either.
Oh.
It could be that she just ran.
That's correct
really fast.
In my version.
No, it's not correct in the hardcover that I have.
What?
We got the
hardcovers at the same time.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Well, I don't know. Did you read the hardcover that you bought or did you read the arc? Because it's also possible, like, mistakes can get introduced after the arc.
So, today, as I was finishing up, I read the hardcover. I guess it was the one that we got sent. So, yeah, it was probably the arc.
Yes, but the it's also wrong in the official...
But it made it. Or it was
in the
right
official Kindle
in the
version.
Arc, and then something happened in the next...
Yeah, because the arc was a soft cover, maybe?
Oh, mine's hard.
No. Mine's hard. Maybe they didn't do soft cover.
That's so interesting. I don't know. The way that they, it's whatever. It happens in books, but that's really interesting how that broke down between the different versions.
Yeah, for sure.
Because even though I had the digital ARC on my Kindle, I bought the official Kindle version because it'll sync up with the audiobook so I can go back and forth.
And oh man, that's cool. I didn't know you did that.
I was reading the our last chapters, and I was like, this footnote makes no sense with where it's connected. And then I was literally reading it in bed right before I was going to go to sleep. And I had to get up, and I pulled the hardcover off my shelf, and the mistake is there also.
Interesting. That's a weird footnote, too, because, like, maybe we'll get into it in the next book. Like, Senare kind of like makes a note, like, oh, we'll talk about that later. And it does make me wonder if, like, I mean, it is Jin Lan, so there's probably some kind of reasoning behind it. But yeah, it is like, are we just covering a bit of a plot hole here? Or like, how did she get down there?
But I mean, she has super strength.
Yeah, she is. Yeah, so I'm not like thinking about it too much. I'm interested to see if it pops up again in the next book, and I just forgot.
I'm pretty sure it does it. Well, it does, but not specifically Janelle. Mm.
Yeah.
There's definitely like a mine that Jin Lyons can dig in, like, what are the implications of the reveal that we will not say that happens in the next book about demons and what it means with Janelle and Jareth. Senare even has a note about, like, what is Jareth? Is, like, did Kieran just make a shell of his old body? Mm-hmm. And, like, there's definitely some, like, in fact, there's a bunch of things in these last chapters that doesn't come up again that I feel like Jin Lyons is waiting to delve into.
Little dandy treats.
When they go to Drahemia's lair and free all those people, those are all people of races that don't exist right now.
Yeah.
There's a woman with spider arms and like a dog man and a cat man.
Yeah.
And like the last centaur. And like, if this was the Marvel comics, all of them would form like a super team that gets like a five.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That'll get like a five comic limited series.
Yeah, because I forgot that they like bring most of them back up to the surface, and they're just like alive and around.
I feel like instead of the super group, after this book, they all get like a support group.
They all sit around. I'm sitting in folding chairs in the basement of a church. Well,
drinking shitty tea.
Yeah.
Cone frees them of whatever spell Drahemia had on them, and then they all go into like the feral position.
They do the Volkeroth move. They have like,
and, like, I love the cat man just pokes the air bubble. It's just a funny image of like, I guess I'm alive, and he just pokes the air bubble.
Yeah, that whole scene goes from being like very dark and like bad to immediately like funny and still, and to be fair, kind of sad, but like it immediately just like, oh, okay, we're good.
What I really like about that scene is that they were here before, and Cone really wanted to free these people, and Galen says, we'll come back for them. And Jin Lyons could have easily not come back for them.
Mm-hmm.
But they did.
Yeah.
And I don't remember what the main plot reason why they went here was. Something to do with Drahemia.
I think they were trying to distract Drahemia.
Oh, yeah. It was a distraction. Yeah. Because they were going to pick up her
loot.
Her stuff.
Yeah, they're gonna play with her toys.
Mm-hmm. But I do like the like circling around to, oh, we'll save these people, and then they actually did.
Yeah. Actually, back a little bit to the reason why they're doing this is I love that moment where they're kind of figuring out, like, okay, like, how are we even gonna manage this? Like, how do we fix this last Johannia problem? And, you know, Talia kind of does the luck math in her head. And it's a very, like, yeah, it's, she, you know, she realizes that pretty much the only way to do it is to heal Johannia, reunite them with her cornerstone, and that stone is the name of all things, and that's, like, Cenere's, like, main thing. And that Cenere, like, catches the vibe and realizes it and volunteers it, and I was like, that was really a moment where I was like, damn, Cenere fucking rules.
I like there that really scene too.
Was emotional change. Mm-hmm. yeah
and
it's quiet, like,
yeah she just sort of nods and then, like, announces, like, okay, this is what we're doing, and Talia doesn't have to say anything even though she knows.
Yeah
And it's funny that Shaloran is the one that is like, why don't we just give her what she wants?
Yeah.
And then they're all like,
Shaloran, always what? The voice of reason, truly. Like, again, the most well-adjusted person here.
Yeah. Shaloran is the Valathea, is the Ninevis, is the Tyanso of this book.
She is one of the honorary cool older women by virtue of being emotionally older.
Stable-ish.
Yes. God, can you imagine just a fucking super team of Tyanso, Dorna, Ninevis, and Shaloran. Oh.
Yes, I can't imagine that. I would read that.
I would read that, but also, like, I'm just imagining a lot of drama. Like, a lot of romantic drama. Because I don't think Dorna and Shaloran would, like, hook up
immediately.
And then, but, like, they're not compatible.
No, yeah. They would just fuck.
And then, right, yeah, but then, like, and Shaloran's super rich and Dorna loves stealing. Like, it's not gonna, it's gonna be, yes. It's gonna be
great. And Tyanso's the empress.
Right, well, yeah.
Yeah. And then Ninevis would just be, like, the exasperated mom of them all. She's got a whole domain to run, too. It's great. Sitcom fodder for
I like
years.
How we spent all this time in, shit, what's Horseland?
Jorat,
and, like, neither of them are Jorates. Like, Janelle was altered, and Ninevis is, like, she just has a birthmark that looks...
Yeah, Dorna's the only one that we really hang out with who's actually Jorates.
Cultural exchange is possible, everyone. Exactly. Anyway, moving on.
They're emotionally Jorates. It's a thing.
Right, yeah. Adoption count. Anyway.
I felt Thervishar's and Cone's pain when Janelle breaks the glass and rips up this ancient old book that's in perfect condition.
That was rough.
Thervishar has a line of, like, I can't look. And that was rough. Like, winces.
Oh, yeah. That was very good.
Not my favorite.
Book nerd's gonna book.
It was worse getting rid of the name of all things, though. I felt Cenere's pain, too.
Yeah.
Because that, like, ugh. I just, what should I have for breakfast today? It'd be so easy.
I mean, and in, like, you know, not only being an incredibly powerful artifact, it was also, like, it was, like, her thing, and I guess, like, part of why it was maybe easier for her to get rid of it, too, is, like, there's a connection to Relis Var, but it was, like, something that, like, she was entrusted with and gained a lot of personal and professional pride from that she had that.
Yeah. She was an expert in using it. Like, she could use it to answer big, long questions, and, like, she knew its limitations. It was, like, kind of, I don't know. Like, in the same way that, like, the One Ring has a personality, not really, but, like, the cornerstones have personalities. Mm-hmm. And,
and it's gonna be scary, too. Like, you've officially flipped against Relis Var, and now you're going to give up what you probably, you know, what is basically your biggest weapon against him.
Yeah.
The One Ring does have a personality. It's evil.
Personality is angy.
Sauron. Yeah, we do kind of have the equivalent of like 8 Saurons running around.
God. What if the ring wraiths were crazy and elemental? And also emotional and had girlfriends.
Yeah. What if they were people and less metaphors for the devil or sin? I don't know. Tolkien's cosmology is like, I don't claim to know it, so. Anywho. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the final battle is like suitably dramatic, but not like drawn out, which is good because like, It's very interesting to see the battle. Steffi already said this, but like the battle being the falling action, not the big emotional core.
Yeah, it was kind of like mopping up the pieces.
Right, yeah, I was like, okay, we're fine. I honestly, like, I felt worse for the book and the name of all things than I did when Shaloran died. Not because I don't like Shaloran, but because, like, it's like she's gonna be fine. Like,
yeah. And especially because it came right on the heels of, like, Javon going to the afterlife. Yeah. Feeling her power, killing Sulis. Like, so I was like, okay, well, Shaloran is dead, but like Javon 2 pages ago embraced her death powers. I think she's gonna be okay.
The first time I read this, you know, when you're like reading a book for the first time and you get near the end and you sort of like speed read a little bit because you're so close to the end. I definitely felt the first time I read this that Shaloran's death was like sort of came out of nowhere and I thought it just like happened. But there's definitely a lead up I noticed this time. She gets that, you know, Sulis comes back and she has that creepy speech that is technically right about toes. Like,
ugh, right? Ugh.
Don't love it. Start with really the don't love it.
It's worse because it makes sense.
It does. Yeah, I did not like how I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I get it.
But like, Shaloran has like head trauma, and she's like touching the back of her head, and she's got blood there. And then, as they're like fighting off Drahemia's madness breath, it shows Shaloran like swaying and like having a hard time standing, and like her death had like a sort of like lead up to it that I didn't notice the first time.
Truly a good girl to the end and then back.
And they tied up the Sulis thing, which is surprising given that Sulis didn't appear in the entire book until that point.
No,
except in flashbacks.
Yeah, okay,
like,
yeah.
She was just like not a player.
Yeah.
I do like that Siobhan. The little speech that Siobhan has where she said, I could have been, you know, I could have listed off Sulis's sin and drawn this death out, but I have friends to help back in reality and then just kill Sulis. And like, I feel like that was written that way on purpose to show that there's a chance that if Siobhan had done the long drawn out listing of sins, and had taken her time killing Sulis, that she might not have been back in time to shove Shalorn's soul back into her body.
What do you think you're going? I will turn this She's death like, around.
I haven't really figured this out yet, but I just, you know, I just pushed it back down into her body.
Yeah.
Yoink.
It's like when you're trying to put the Christmas tree back in the box, and you're like, it's fine.
there's a moment in Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood where Winry throws a wrench at Ed's head and he like passes out, and it shows like a simplified Ed and Al with Ed's like soul coming out of his body and Al like pushing it back down. That's what I think of.
Yeah, I can see the chibi animation pretty well for these characters, actually, now that you mention it.
Also, how fucking rad was it that Shaloran, like, used all the metal around there to make giant dragon manacles?
Oh, that was cool.
That was some Mistborn cool. shit.
Yeah, that was absolutely. Good. Yeah, the bit where she was like, there's a lot of nails and metal and shit around here. I'm gonna make something happen.
Yeah.
Like, while she's, like, actively dying already.
Just like little parts that I really like now that Talon has Kieran's memories and everything that goes with it. She knows about the nickname Thervy for Thervishar and then uses it. I like that's. I still read that and I was like, that's very talented of you.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I love like the lead up now where they're like, okay, Kieran has to pretend to still be like crazy old Valkoroth. But like, I love the setup where, and you know, the kind of that very last scene where he's like, you know, this, all that, you know, Tenye energy used to be a trap, but now it's that for the god that he was, but the god that he is now used to be a thief. And so he like, you know, picks the lock basically and leaves.
He breaks all the gems.
And I was like, that's dope.
That was cool.
And like, I think the last line of the book is like, it's time for the greatest con of his life. I was like, yes, I love a heist. And I love when a heist is not a heist. And like, I love the idea of like, all right, we're setting the, you know, the, we have a con to run on fucking the smartest guy in two universes.
Yeah, and Zaltaroth, who he also says is a genius.
Yeah.
And I love that scene, like, back in the Memory Palace when Kieran is like, oh, I just, like, kept you guys back to say goodbye, and Janelle gets all sad. And then Kieran's like, no, not that kind of goodbye. and he has, like, the thing about, like, I'm going to figure out a way that this all works out where it's like not the heroic sacrifice where we can, you know, have our happily ever after.
Yeah, you have to. I really like the message of these books. Like, it seems hopeless. Trying anyway is better than the big heroic, like, suicide, basically. It's like, no. Try to be happy. Doesn't always work, but like, also, I love that I am a sucker for the way that the lock worked, which was just like Valkoroth is a black hole and he constantly takes. So the minute that he starts giving back emotionally, the lock breaks. Yeah. It's like, the metaphor. The I mean, yeah, it's not that simple, but like, and it's,
very poetic.
Making fun of it. I do love it.
Yes.
There's another scene where similar to Kieran's I love you, and Therese, you asshole. when Sanurai finally gives up and completes the ritual, Thervishar goes, I'm proud of you. And Sanurai goes, oh, fuck off.
it's so true, though.
Delightful.
If someone said they were proud of me, I would punch them in the face. Jesus Christ.
How dare you?
Not my parent.
Also, something I didn't pick up the first time I read this, there's some Siobhan foreshadowing when she takes care of Sulis. She's looking out over the afterlife, and she says something about this land so desperately wanted to be loved. And I'm like,
Sorry. That you can edit that out. That's what Harry and I do when we make noises. It's the Goron, it's the Goron sound from Ocarina of Time.
Oh, that's why it sounded familiar. I'm trying to find anything else, but I think that is it. I think this is still my favorite book. I really, really enjoy this book. It's got kind of everything. It's got that, like, chaotic bottle episode energy of like personalities conflicting but also people like sassing each other. It's got dragons and krakens but also emotions, and it's a very satisfying ending. It's like probably the happiest ending of the four that we've read so far.
It's definitely the most hopeful of the book.
Yeah. Like, it's like, okay, we have a plan.
I've got nothing else. It's a good book. I like it a lot.
It is a very good book. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where does it fall for you guys in your, like, ranking? Of, let's say, of the four that we've covered so far.
I'm going to be unintentionally dramatic. And be, this is still my least favorite book.
Really? Ooh.
Yeah. Well, it's not that I dislike it. It's just that the first book was such a surprise that, like, it still is exciting to me when I was like, this is not the book I expected. It's so, like, thrilling. I love Jurat, like, as a culture. Like, I love being immersed in new cultures and new expectations. And I just really like the end battle and, like, all the weird elf politics. Like, this, for me, all the personalities and, like, people yelling at each other is, like, I don't know. It's, like, growing up in my household. It's like, I don't need to hear that. Yeah. So, it's, yeah, it's a very personal reason, not a critique.
I think that's
novel.
The only way to rank these books, though, right? Because, like, they are...
It's a good point.
So yeah. Excellent, just in terms of writing. Like, it truly does come down to, like, what's your personal preference of the book?
Yeah.
I just want to say I love all these books.
All your children's. Yes.
But when we reread The Memory of Souls, I liked it. Memory of Souls used to be the bottom book for me. But then when we did it for the podcast, I appreciated it a lot more. And so it has been raised. When we did this book, House of Always, I still love it. But I definitely didn't like it as much as the first time I read it.
It's dropped down a bit, yeah. Fair.
Yeah, so it's 4 for me. To me, it's still... It's Name of All Things, Memory of Souls, Ruin of Kings, House of Always.
Nice.
But I still, yeah. Like, I still rate all the books 5 on
exactly,
Goodreads.
Right? Like, this is not a matter of, like, which ones are better or worse. This is a matter of, like, which ones do you like more?
I just think some of the Siobhan Kalindra chapters were a lot of spinning wheels. And they were just a bit more boring.
A little draggy.
The second time around. Because, I don't know. It's definitely more of a, like, more than all the other books, rereading it, already knowing what happens was a hindrance for this book than the others.
Yeah, I think that's fair, too.
Yeah, I actually won't argue with that. I think, yeah, that's a...
Like, there were more, like, get-to-the-point moments in this one. Like Siobhan's meeting with Kieran's sister?
Kieran's sister?
Or aunt, whatever.
Gail's aunt. Galen. Okay,
yeah. Yeah. To Shenya?
Yeah, or the other one.
Yeah, you could have cut that.
Garicia,
right. Yes.
Nice.
I think Deshenya is the one that died.
I think so, yeah.
Eh. But that is a commentary on their personalities. Sucky. Yeah.
But you know what? The thing is, though, like, I could read this book again in, like, 6 months and have a completely different decision.
Well, the other day you were telling us you want to reread all 4 in like a month.
Yeah,
I mean, we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, listeners, it is all right. It's September 9th, 2023. We'll probably start Discord of Gods in like a couple weeks. And Josh wants to reread all 4 books before we start Discord of Gods, which, like, I'm inclined to give you a little more time if you want. I'm perfectly happy to do that.
No.
Okay.
I like the challenge.
Okay.
If that's how you want to play it, man.
I feel like you do not need to reread the first 2 again. You've read both of those, like, what, at least 5 times now?
Many.
Four or five, yeah. I think Ruin of Kings is the one I've read the least. No, it's probably House of Always.
Okay.
But I think this is only second time me going through this one.
Yeah, we've caught up to you on this one.
I am so excited to read Discord of Gods because, like,
I'm pretty pumped.
Oh my god, I am plowing through this as fast as I can. And it was highly enjoyable. So I'm excited to like take it a little slower next time, really absorb, because I'm sure there's so much I missed.
I would love to remember large chunks of that book.
Yeah, I could name you like maybe 4 plot points from the whole book, and they're big. I don't have the details.
Yeah.
Let's make our predictions of where we're going to rank Discord of Gods.
Ooh.
I think for me, it's going to be 2.
I think it's either going to be 1 or 2 for me.
I think it'll be 3. Yeah. 2 or 3.
Hey gang, there's a new book by Jen Lyons coming out in 2024, hopefully. And yours truly's were all beta readers for it. Alpha readers, yeah. Honestly. But yeah. So we've all seen bits of it so far.
I technically am a beta reader for it, but didn't actually read it.
Oh really? I did.
I never read it.
I read pretty much her whole first draft and left comments, but I haven't had time to read the drafts that she's put out since.
Yeah, I read portions, but not the full thing.
It's a very different experience than reading a finished book. Like, I found it
deeply fascinating,
but it was definitely something where, like, I didn't have time to keep up with it. I didn't have time or enjoy it enough to keep up with it long term. It's called The Sky on Fire, although I think that name may change. It's Jen Lyons.
I think she implied in her Discord that that's the title.
Yeah, okay. But it's probably going to be good.
She said something like, I guess that's the title.
Yeah.
Which I've heard that from authors before, where they like put like a temporary title and then it's like ends up being the title.
Yeah.
Yeah, apparently it comes out July 9th.
It's very specific. That's good.
Which, by the time this episode comes out,
actually,
will be closer than
it is now.
That is
true. So yeah, listeners, I guess we should like officially say we're doing Discord of Gods next. We're going to be talking full series spoilers, because mm-hmm. that is how we roll.
Yes.
We do full spoilers for the book, and because it's the last book, we will be hollering about everything. So if you, for whatever reason, haven't finished Discord of Gods by the time you start listening to the episodes, you go get spoiled immediately. I personally vow to yell the solution of the plot in the first 30 seconds of the episode.
I seen her. She keeps.
Yes.
She do it.
Yeah.
Readers, prepare for finally. We've waited all these books to see the return of Butter Belly. Reunited with his long lost son, Boji.
Last time we recorded, we were like, oh yeah, I'm sure we'll like learn more about Boji and find out what happens to Boji in the next chapters. No, Boji disappeared from the plot. I hope he's okay. I think he's probably dead though.
I'm pretty sure Siobhan says something similar of like, I hope Boji got out of there and he's alive, but maybe not.
I mean, he seems like a survivor.
Truly, yeah. I mean, maybe he's in book 5 and we don't remember. It's very
possible.
That's
entirely possible.
Yeah.
Steph, are you reading anything?
I am reading The Bell in the Fog by Lev A.C. Rosen. I think that's it right now. Yeah.
Sensible.
Yeah, I'm chilling.
Tame. Nice.
Yeah. It's good.
Josh, what are you reading?
I'm nearing the end of The Blighted Stars by Megan O'Keefe, and I already have the arc for the sequel, which I can't remember the name of, because the arc literally says Megan O'Keefe Trilogy Number 2.
Maybe it doesn't have a name yet.
It does. I've seen it advertised. Can't remember.
A bold thing to name your books. Like, author name, Trilogy Number 2.
Oh, it's called The Fractured Dark. And I'm also reading The Phoenix King by Aparna Verma. I'm about 100 pages in, and it didn't, like, hook me at first. But then, like, something happened without spoiling it, and then now I'm kind of hooked on it. And then I'm also starting the sequel to last year's The Daughter of Red Winter by Ed McDonald, titled The Traitor of Red Winter, which is already out by the time you're listening to this, but it's not out till October. And that's it. That's all I'm reading. Christina,
also, what are you reading? By your standards, very, very sane.
Yeah, truly.
What am I reading? So I am going to be finishing up Mammoth at the Gates, which is the fourth in the Singing Hills cycle, Nevoy. But also I paused that because it is September when we're recording, and even though it's still 80 in Fahrenheit, I still needed some fall vibes. So I read Christina Henry's Horseman, which is like a follow-up to Sleepy Hollow. It's really good. I love Christina Henry. And not just because her name is my name, plus my husband's name, although it does make it easy to remember. Is. It is, yeah. That's why I picked up her first book, and then I was like, holy shit, she's so good. So, yeah.
Nope.
Good books.
I want to keep fall at bay as long as I can.
Wait, I also want to say...
I hate summer.
I also want to say I want to start soon. I just want to advertise it in case I don't get to it. Anthony Ryan, who wrote a lot of fantasy books that I like.
Your most top recently, book of the year, I think, was an Anthony Ryan book.
Yeah, so far. By the way, I've read like, feels like 10 to 20 books in August. If we did that episode now, except for my top one, my books would be completely different. Nice. But... on top of finishing a trilogy of fantasy books, he apparently wrote a horror book that comes out this fall called Red River 7. I don't know what it's about. I just know I like the author, and I'm hoping to start reading that soon.
I'm putting that on my list for sure.
You can find me at 45wits on Twitter, on Blue Sky, on Twitch. You can read my blog where I write about other stuff besides books on 45wits.com. That's all I got.
You can find me on social media, not so much Twitter anymore, but mostly Blue Sky, at Steph O. Kingston.
And you can find me on Blue Sky at Christina Ladd. And I've officially closed down my Twitter because it just got gross.
I just want Elon to pay to store my stupid tweets.
Honestly, yeah, out. Like, it's all locked down and everything, so don't try to message me or anything.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully by the time this episode comes out, someone else owns that website.
Or it just collapses under the weight of
Or it's just a
white
crater.
Nationalism.
Yeah.
We can dream.
Alright, well,
this book is over!
I was gonna say that. This book is over, and this episode is over, as was foretold.
Books.
Thank you for listening to No Page Unturned, part of the Geekly Inc. podcast family. You can now find us on Blue Sky at No Page Unturned. Our amazing theme music is by Bad Sparrow, and our cover art is by Mangoyu Art.